Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. If it's Saturday, it's that time again. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this in Los Angeles. 347-205-9631. 60 minutes goes by quick, and Dan Rather is not running it. So catch the blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports for the archive version, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. Thanks for tuning in. Last week, the archive version went really well as we continue to get this show on another stratosphere as far as getting more and more listeners each week. There's 101 right now. Thank you very much for tuning in. So without further ado, it's more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Doc, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third of all, you got a great guest coming in today.
I do. Mark, again, thanks for the great introduction. Mark, I'm doing well. Everything is functioning just like God made it. So you can't beat that. Pittsburgh, my God, it's gorgeous. You know, they call it God's country for a reason, but, you know, we have that fall foliage and the trees and the entire landscapes are magnificent. Temperatures in the 70s, almost like Indian summer. So more people can get a hold of me, as we know, as they have been doing, gjrmd308@outlook.com. And, you know, our topic today, and I've got an excellent guest. Our topic today is a huge topic, and the topic is sleep apnea in adults. And we're going to kind of subdivide that down into really some surgical treatment for adults and a very specific surgical treatment that I've got an exceptional guest on today. Her name is Jerry Lynn White. She works for the Inspire Company. She's been in medical technologies, Jerry Lynn, for about 15, 20 years in the technology aspect of medicine. I know you've been with Inspire for maybe 10 to 12 years. And you were with, Medtronic. So you've been in this neuromodulation business or neurostimulating business, correct?
That's correct.
Wonderful. And, you know, what I wanted to talk about, and I'll let you say a few words, Geraldine, as well. I want to talk about sleep apnea. And, you know, just interestingly, I get in my practice probably from an average about maybe 4 to 10 calls per day for people that have sleep apnea. And, you know, working with Inspire and Geraldine White, my God, our phone, it rings and rings for people interested in this new technology. And, you know, if we go, you know, which I like always to do is go to basics. And, you know, if we start with basics, what is sleep apnea? The exact term is obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA. Now, it's a disorder of sleep, and it's really characterized by obstructive apneas, hypopneas, where we have repetitive, complete or partial collapse of the upper airway during sleep. And I'd like to say that again. It's where we have obstruction of typically the upper, but it also can be the lower airway with a repetitive, complete or partial collapse. And, you know, in doing that, what do our patients experience? You know, that's the next thing. What are the symptoms? Well, with regard to symptoms, typically people will have loud snoring. And I think a lot of people know about that one. Daytime sleepiness, gasping, choking, snorting, interruptions in their breathing while sleeping. So that's what we're talking about, all right? The sleep disorder where people just don't sleep well. And also, you know, we talk about people getting into deeper levels of sleep, which are called REM sleep. Usually people that have sleep apnea do not get into the deeper levels of REM sleep. And, you know, when they go to the doctors, you know, they're usually, it's their bed partner that says, hey, you know what, I timed you last night. You stopped breathing for 30 seconds multiple times, or the snoring will wake the house. And this is usually what we see with adults. And again, this topic can be divided in obstructive sleep apnea for adults as well as children. But we want to kind of focus on sleep apnea in adults today so that we know that people go in, see their doctor or healthcare provider, talks to them, you know, about what's going on. And, you know, you usually bring the spouse in and they'll go ahead and give the doc or the nurse practitioner or PA the facts. And usually, you know, they'll do an examination. Sometimes they'll do a chest x-ray. Sometimes they'll do sinus x-rays, x-rays of the throat. But the big diagnostic tool is the sleep study. And usually the sleep study can be done either in home or you may need to go to a sleep lab. And there are certain factors that predicate each one. And then what we're looking for in that testing is how many times you have a pause. And usually we count them. We have moderate sleep apnea, which can be less than about 5 pauses per hour, up to 30 or 40 pauses per hour. And, of course, we look at it as light, medium, and then heavy-duty sleep apnea. Having said all that, once the diagnosis is made, once we've done some diagnostic testings as well as examinations, you know, looking at the throat, looking at the neck, looking at their, we call it BMI, their body mass index, you know, looking at their waistline, and again, looking at a lot of clinical factors and then putting together a plan, they may qualify to do the first type of treatment. And again, we call that CPAP. Continuous positive airway pressure. And that's usually what many, many people are using. And I believe our latest statistics for the Northern Hemisphere, there's almost 1 billion people that have sleep apnea and are currently using CPAP. Now, with all that, we have failures. We have people that do not want to use the CPAP. They really are not comfortable with it. They knock it off at night. And again, they feel like they're suffocating. And indeed, if that's the case, and again, they're doing a multitude of other things with, you know, trying to lose weight. You know, they've gone to their doc and again, the physical exam. You know, now again, I'm going to get Jerry Lynn on here momentarily. But, you know, there are many areas of our upper airway that can be a problem. We can start, you know, with the nose. You know, is the nose an issue with regard to nasal obstruction? You know, are the tonsils an issue, you know, with regard to being large, being obstructive? Is the jaw, the mandible, an issue because of male development? You know, is it the adenoids? Is it the soft palate? Are the muscles of the throat sagging? And again, are the tonsils enlarged? And then we go down a little bit further to the base of the tongue. Do we have a large base of tongue? Are there large lingual tonsils? You know, do the sidewalls of the throat collapse? It even goes down further with regard to the voice box. Is there a problem with the structures of the voice box that could give us obstruction? And that's kind of, you know, starting this topic and then focusing. And that's why I have Jira Lynn here today and why she's been so gracious in coming on. With regard to diagnosing upper airway obstruction, she's been involved in a procedure, which I think, Jira Lynn, has been around for a while, but not extremely popular. And that basically is this hypoglossal nerve stimulation, correct?
Correct. It's been available in the U.S. for about 10 years.
And where have they been doing it? Where have they been using it? How has it been marketed, so to speak?
At the beginning, between 2014, when we got commercialization and approval by the FDA, we started out in a lot of the tertiary institutions and worked with the individuals and physicians that helped us with the clinical trials. So we started out very small. Inspire took a very methodical approach to ensure that the patient outcomes were always as top-notch and close to 100% as possible. So we were very slow and diligent in how we spread this across the country, which is currently available now in about 700 areas of the United States.
Wow. And how many doctors have you touched with this? It has to be hundreds, doesn't it?
Sure. We have right now we have about 450 implanting physicians, but we have, in addition to that, about another 500 physicians who do diagnostic testing as well as patient follow-up post-implant.
Wow. And, you know, just in general, and we'll talk to our audience about that, how many implants have been done?
Currently, as of yesterday, we are over 30,000 patients implanted in the United States.
That's tremendous. That is tremendous. And, you know, with regard to, do you want to tell us about the procedure and about the implantation and kind of how it's developed? Can you give us some information into that?
Sure. So for those of you who don't know, Inspire is the implantable device for sleep apnea patients that can't use or choose not to use a CPAP. As Dr. Roscoe mentioned, you get diagnosed and assessed as to whether you're a candidate. Once you are a candidate, it's inserted through two small incisions. It's an outpatient procedure. You're in the OR for about an hour, give or take, and you go home the same day. It's a pretty fast recovery. You take over-the-counter medications for any postoperative pain. You return to non-strenuous activities within just a couple of days. The battery component of the device will last over 11 years, so it's not as if you're going to have to come back in and get that changed. We do have a program that we actually will program and customize your device to your needs. So as Dr. Roscoe mentioned, it's based on the number of times you stop breathing per night. It has a lot to do with your snoring, your sleep patterns. What we do is bring you into the office post-implant, 30 days, we let you heal, and then the physician's team will program your device and allow you to use it all night, every night, for about 6 weeks. We'll monitor you through that six-week period. We've got a Bluetooth monitoring system that you'll be taught. You can download an app to check your own progress, and you'll self-acclimate to the therapy. About the six-week mark, we'll bring you back into the sleep lab, and we will customize the device. So an Inspire person, along with the staff at the facility you choose, will be there all night. They will watch your sleeping patterns, and they will program the device to get you the most successful results. Our patient outcomes, like I said, are the most important thing to us as a company. So we will work with you and with your physicians to make sure you get the best patient outcome. And the nicest part is Inspire is completely customizable as you move forward. So as you use it all night, every night throughout the rest of your lifetime, when you turn the device on, you go to sleep. It's going to work throughout the night. It's going to turn off and on. There is no sensory function to the nerve that we work with, so you will not feel it throughout the night. When you get up in the morning, you'll turn the device off. So it's a simple on-off with a remote. As I said, you can download your information on your app and see how you're doing. And you can also provide information to your physician based on how you feel in the morning. Is your therapy working? Do you notice any changes? Things like that, which are very critical to us, customizing it to your needs, will be available for you. It's also MRI compatible. So if you have to have an MRI, we can set guidelines up and give information to your physician so that you can get an MRI.
Beautiful. My God, thank you for that. You know, as far as if I can just kind of digress a little bit, you know, as far as when patients are getting prepared, possibly to see if they're a candidate or not, you know, I see them in the office, and typically, you know, we want to make sure, and I think this is important, Geraldine, that they're potentially a good candidate and the obstruction is in an area anatomically that the device will work for us, correct?
Correct.
And,
so let me tell you a little bit about patients that are qualifying for Inspire. So you need to have moderate to severe sleep apnea, as you discussed, with the number of times you stop breathing. Not significantly overweight. We want to make sure that, you know, it's going to be compatible and work for you.
Yes.
And then the airway exam that you're talking about. So we have you come in, Dr. Roscoe or the performing physician will do a what's called a drug-induced sedated endoscopy. It's a quick, less than five-minute procedure. We sedate you. We want to see how your airway collapses while you are sleeping. It's important to determine how it collapses because that will determine whether you're a candidate and whether Inspire therapy will work for you. So we'll do all of that prior to moving you forward to the implant. And because it's covered by insurance, we want to have all that paperwork and documentation ahead of time.
Excellent. And, you know, as far as if I can just elaborate a little bit, with regard to, you know, who qualifies, the big thing is anatomically is the area that we're looking at, the area that the device will work on. And, Geraldine, the device typically helps the base of the tongue, but also the soft palate, not collapse during sleep, correct? And that's through, we call it the hypoglossal nerve stimulation, that there's a nerve that goes to the tongue, which actually helps extend the tongue out of our mouth and keeps the soft palate from falling backward. So that when we're doing the surgical technique that she had mentioned, we do go in, we identify this nerve, which is in the base of the tongue area, and actually more of it's a wrapping of this nerve, correct, Geraldine, with the device?
That's correct. Correct.
And, yes, and then we go ahead surgically, and we find the nerve, we wrap it, and then basically we take a little tunnel under the skin and actually implant the neurostimulator between the ribs. And then there's also a little oxygen sensor also that goes with that. Correct, Geraldine?
Yes, there's a sensor lead that's actually going to determine your breathing pattern and help the device process the information correctly so that it mechanically is moving your airway, soft palate, and tongue forward so that it's opening your airway and allowing you to breathe normally throughout the night.
Fantastic. And as she mentioned, the surgery itself is about an hour. And now it's very, very specific that this area of the oral cavity and pharynx needs to be the area that is collapsing. And that goes along with the obstructive sleep apnea. And it's the anatomical area of the tongue and the soft palate that it actually works on. And, you know, Geraldine, with regard to, and again, we're getting some questions here, with regard to any adverse outcomes. I have been, you know, our team did a lot of research on this. And, Geraldine, they were mentioning, yeah, there could be some issues, you know, with regard to fatigue of the hypoglossal nerve or some fibrosis between the leads and the hypoglossal nerve, migration of the device, et cetera. Have you had any of those problems?
The procedure rate is very safe and effective. We have about a 1% population that may have some issues that are healed over time. We have not had any long-term issues with any patient implants. So anything
wonderful
that has taken place has been able to be fixed without a problem.
Yes. And you figure that's 30,000 implants, 30,000 individuals. That's tremendous. And, it, you know, as far as up-and-coming technology, with your medical device, is there another plateau that I'd like to get to with regard to new technology or newer technology?
Yes, as all device companies do, we continue to try and increase the benefits and what our devices are able to do. So, yes, in the future, you will see other nuances that we will add to the current device. But as of right now, we are keeping the device as is because the success rate and patient satisfaction rate is at about 96%. So we feel we have it pretty well down as far as
wow.
The device itself. Right now, the most important part, as you discussed before, is that there are 20 million patients with sleep apnea that are not being treated currently. So our goal as Inspire, as a company, is to educate patients on obstructive sleep apnea to make sure that patients are being treated. Because as you know, being a physician, you see it all the time. The biggest
yep.
consequences to untreated sleep apnea are you know, heart and brain issues. You know, it can
Correct.
Lead to accidents. You know, we see a lot of the FedEx Amtrak accidents that you hear, and then months later you'll hear that that driver had sleep apnea and fell asleep at the wheel. Things like that that we want to make sure patients are educated and getting treated in whatever manner is appropriate and determined by the physician, but it's more key to get them into your office and get them treated by a specialist.
Excellent. No, your company's done a good job. Mark Mancini, do you have anything for us?
Yeah, I got some questions. My friend Gail from Clearwater, Florida says, hi, Doc. Missed you last week. Boy, I'll tell you, she's a regular in here listening to the show. She don't miss it. And she says, basically, how would you know you have sleep apnea? Usually, if you're with a significant other or a partner, they can hear you snore. But how do you hear yourself snore, and how are you aware of it if you don't have a significant other? Wow, that's a great question.
She's complicating the issues. Yeah, Mark, you know what? As far as, you know, how do people know? Well, you know, for the most part, you start to have a myriad of symptoms. And, you know, the things are you get tired. You know, you have daytime sleepiness. You're not restored after sleep. You have loud snoring. You may awake with choking or gasping. You may have lack of concentration, your change in moods, morning headaches. I mean, there's a myriad of symptoms. But you fall asleep, you know, with monotonous activities. And as Geraldine had mentioned, you know, with regard to drivers, with regard to, you know, driving a truck, driving a train, et cetera, they tend to fall asleep. That's usually, you know, what we see. You need to have a nap every day, or you get home from work before dinner. You know, you're kind of sleepy. You lie down, put your feet up, and fall sound asleep. Those are kind of the indications that maybe something just isn't right with our sleep patterns. And, you know, we mentioned REM sleep. If you're not getting into REM sleep, then usually you have a lot of fatigue. You don't feel good. Going to bed and sleeping doesn't seem to make it better. But otherwise, you know, you look at your behavior. What's going on with your behavior? Are you getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning and you're still exhausted and can't wait to get back to bed? You know, those kind of things. And, you know, it's a matter when you do see, you know, your health providers, you may want them to, you know, kind of, if you have a question, you may want them to start to question you. You know, do you feel sleepy after sleeping? Are you have daytime fatigue? Is it difficult to keep your eyes open during the day? Do you struggle to stay awake during the day? Do you take naps? How long of a nap do you have to take? Do you fall asleep, you know, when you're watching a movie, reading a book, et cetera? So, you know, you want to get your providers involved. You know, we talk about the four pillars. The first pillar is the history. You know, you want them to kind of go over that with you and kind of see what's going on. And then I mentioned to you they can do an examination, Mark, where they're looking at the throat, looking at the tonsils, seeing overall if there's an issue of obesity. You know, the one issue we're looking at is BMI, body mass index, and that's height to weight ratios. Again, certain people will have that. You know, we have males that may have a large neck. We know about the obesity indexes. So there's a lot of things there that maybe if you're suspicious, talk to your healthcare provider. You know, again, after they've done the examination, then we do diagnostic testing, and that's where, you know, we do maybe the home sleep study. There are certain professions as a pilot that may need more of a laboratory in-house sleep study because of their critical job. But, again, there's diagnostic testing. So, indeed, Gail, if you're suspicious that, boy, you know, I'm getting older, but I'm tired all the time, think about sleep apnea. Okay, Mark?
Geraldine, yeah, Robin from Youngstown, Ohio, coming in. Another great lady that listens to your show, Doc. She says, you know, could this be a lack of vitamins in the system? Is your equilibrium off? Could all this tie into basically what sleep apnea is about?
Well, you know, anything that we do, Mark, you know, these are complex symptoms, complex questions. You know, not taking enough supplements again, with vitamins being along those lines, that may be part of an issue. You know, allergy plays a role in daily fatigue and daytime fatigue. It could be her medication regime is making her fatigued. So, yeah, again, the vitamins alone probably are not the culprit with regard to sleep apnea. But, again, that's why we have healthcare professionals. We need her maybe to see her healthcare professional and ask questions. Could my medication be causing me to be fatigued? Could my diet be doing that? And, you know, things like that, Mark. That's the reason we go see our healthcare professional. But vitamins alone probably are not the culprit that could do that.
One more question. I'll give it back to you. Barry from Cranston, Rhode Island says, well, this is the time now allergies kick up and everything. How much vitamin C do I need? It helps me out a lot. I don't want to over vitamin C myself, but how much is good enough per day?
Well,
yeah, another
question. You know, again, very broad question. Usually 1,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C is good for our health. And, you know, the thing is with vitamin C in particular, it's kind of hard to OOD on it or overdose on it. You know, it's that family of water-soluble vitamins, meaning that if you were to take a little bit too much, you would basically go ahead and you just pee it out. Your urine would be very yellow overall. So, indeed, vitamin C is water-soluble. Again, along that line, now, where you have to be careful with vitamins are the fat-soluble vitamins. That's A, D, E, and K. That's an issue if you take too much. You don't pee them out. They stay absorbed in your system. So you need to be cautious about the dosage on A, D, E, and K. But C being water-soluble, it's not going to hurt you, but about 1,000 milligrams a day. How does that answer that one?
It does, and I'll take some more questions as you get back to that nice interview with Geraldine White.
Yes. You know, going on, Geraldine, you know, with regard to, you know, your organization and the requirements, now we're not talking about this procedure in children. I think we're looking at typically people 18 and older. Is that the guideline that they set up for this hypoglossal nerve stimulation?
Yes, for right now, as of today, it's 18 years and older. If they do have a pediatric patient that, you know, is either their, you know, their immediate family member or they know of somebody, they need to see one of our pediatric ENTs, and we have a clinical trial that we do with the pediatric Downs patients population that they could be considered for. But as a standard implant, if you go on the Inspire website, which is www.inspiresleep.com, you can find a doctor. Any of those physicians can treat 18 years and above.
Wonderful. And, you know, again, with regard to your physician-surgeon base, there is training required by your organization before one can't become an implantable surgeon for you, correct?
That's correct. We have a pretty rigorous program, as you know. We do a lot of clinical presentations. We do a lot of one-on-one training. We also have a hands-on cadaver lab course where the physician goes and they will perfect the procedure prior to doing it in any patient. And then we have ongoing training. So anytime the procedure is changed or tweaked or we find a better, easier, simpler way for the physician to do it, we will then present that to the physician. There's always an Inspire person in the room also when you're having the procedure done to ensure that everything goes smoothly and that we're following the same process every single time.
Wonderful. And, you know, Geraldine, with regard to prior to implantation, say that day in the OR, the equipment definitely is checked to make sure there are no defects before implantation, correct? And that the battery pack is working also?
That is correct. We run a simulation testing and we do all the pre-implant programming just to make sure that everything is functioning correctly. And once the device is implanted into the patient, prior to the patient, you know, having their incisions closed up and the patient goes to post-op, we check the device again. So we do a couple different checks throughout that procedure to make sure that that device is functioning correctly before you're going home.
Excellent. And you mentioned also the longevity of the battery is in the 10 to 11 year area.
Correct. Right now we're showing it about 11 years. The way that medical devices work is you can only claim or, you know, promote the number of years that your device has actually been implanted into a patient and actually used. So our clinical trial patients are now coming up on their battery changes. They're averaging about 11 and 12 years right now.
Wonderful. And, you know, just along those lines, with regard to a battery change, what is the technical procedure involved in actually doing that? Can you help us with that?
Sure. If you have a battery change, you're just going to come in the OR. It's an outpatient procedure. Only the incision that's in your chest, and we'll open up that little 2-inch incision, take out the old battery. We just unscrew it, put in the new battery, and you're good to go.
And then the surgeon would close the incision, and bingo. What about reprogramming?
Correct.
Yes. What happens there? Is that needed also?
So we would actually reprogram the new battery to be the same settings as your old battery before it's even implanted. So we would download whatever your current settings were with the old device. We'd put those into the new device, and you'd go home with your remote and turn it on, and it would act as if nothing had changed for you.
Beautiful. And you know what? I just, again, financially, does insurance pay for that?
Correct. Insurance pays for not only the screening processes, but also the implant procedure, the patient follow-up, as well as the revisions, which would be a battery change.
Got it. And you know what? For our listeners, would you be able to tell us what's the cost of this item? I know it's expensive. It's technologically great. What does it cost to have that implanted?
The actual cost to the facility is $24,950,
okay.
But that's not the cost to the patient. So normally the procedure is covered. You may have to pay a copay, but we have a Inspire prior authorization process, so we don't like surprises. So once you get qualified for the procedure, we'll put all the paperwork through to insurance, and you will know ahead of time before the implant date is scheduled what your copay is for that procedure. But it's covered by federal, it's covered by VA, it's covered by commercial insurances, as well as Medicare.
Wonderful. And, you know, I've had the opportunity for the training, and, of course, when I do anything in the OR, the Inspire people are there to assist me. And, you know, we talked about qualifying people. If I can go back, Geraldine, just a little bit, with regard to, you know, step one, step two. You know, step one, is the procedure we do first is called a DICE. And Geraldine had alluded to that. That's drug-induced surgical endoscopy. And overall, what that is, you know, the goal here is to make the right diagnosis. If indeed we're able to visualize collapse of the soft palate and even the tongue in a, we call it anterior-posterior direction, they seem to be a candidate for Inspire. If indeed when we're doing this DICE or drug-induced surgical endoscopy, there seems to be collapse, circumferential of soft tissue, and the lateral walls seem to collapse, then indeed that's not the procedure for them. Correct, Geraldine? So that's the important aspect. Go ahead.
No, that would be correct.
That's all. So we do step one. So we visualize and we actually videotape that collapse of the airway. And then once we have that, we go through the authorization process for our patients trying to get this device, of course, paid for. And, you know, it does take a little bit of time, Geraldine. we've had some, you know, a little bit of a time factor where it's been maybe 4 to 6 to 8 weeks before we're hearing back from insurance carriers. Does that seem to be standard with your patients?
Medicare, because they have a national coverage policy, it's just a benefits check for any Medicare patient, and same with the Veterans Association. Standard commercialization, we're seeing about a 10-day to 2-week turnaround on average, but it could take, we know insurance companies sometimes take longer, so it could take as long as 6 weeks for us to find out.
Okay. And, you know, like I was saying, when I'm there in the OR doing the DICE procedure, I indeed have Inspire personnel right there to assist me if I have any questions, any question about what's going on, you know, with regard to what we're visualizing. They're extremely knowledgeable and, of course, very, very helpful in determining if this patient would be a candidate overall. Mark, do you have any more for us?
Yeah, Ralph coming out of Pittsburgh says, can diabetics qualify for this?
You know, again, now with regard to qualifying, you know, we need to make sure from a general health standpoint that the patient would be able to tolerate, you know, a general anesthetic. So that would be the first thing, depending on their diabetic status and, you know, again, their ability to heal. And once we're, you know, once they've been, say, cleared by their endocrinologist or their diabetologist or family doctor, that they feel they could undergo an anesthetic as well as a surgery, and then, of course, we would bring them into the OR and do step one, which is the DICE. That's where we're looking at the tissues and tissue collapse. So it is possible, but again, we want to make sure that our patient's healthy enough to go through, in a sense, two procedures and to heal well and not to have infection. You know, that's what we see sometimes with regard to our diabetic patients, especially with an implant. They tend to be infected or get infected easily. So we'd want those bases covered before we would want to proceed. But indeed, it's something, yes, a diabetic could qualify. And Geraldine, do you have any information on things like that with comorbidities of patients that may be of issue?
Yes, if you go on the Inspire website, inspiresleep.com, you can look and there's a full list of anything that we would say may be a concern or something to consider regarding whether or not you're a candidate, but all the information is going to be there. And let me mention this, Dr. Roscoe, as you have a lot of people listening here for questions. There's also on the website a patient ambassador program on the right-hand side of the screen when you go onto the website. There is an area that you can actually say, I want to talk to somebody who has the device already that's just like me. And you can go in and put in and make it very customized as to your age, your demographics, where you know, where you live, where you work, you know, what your preferences are. And we will find somebody within that 30,000 group of people that already are implanted that is willing to speak to you directly. We email you their cell phone number, their contact information, and then you can reach out and talk to that person one-on-one without any involvement from Inspire or your physician's office. You're just having a conversation with somebody who already has a device that is willing and able to answer your questions openly and honestly.
My God, what technology, but what resources, Geraldine, that's fantastic. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, we got Janine from Vail, Colorado. She says, sleep apnea undetected, is that dangerous?
Yes. You know, with regard to things that can happen to us, you know, we worry about, again, hypertension, all right? And that's high blood pressure. The other thing that happens, especially if we have sleep apnea, there's a whole scenario. One other serious factor is something called cor pulmonale. And this is where when we do have apneic episodes, the heart rate slows down. The heart can actually almost stop. And in doing that, what happens, the blood pours into the heart, stretches the heart muscle. and then the heart muscle has to contract against a larger volume, which indeed weakens the heart muscle and can lead to coronary insufficiency and, you know, quite a few other problems. So, yes, it is a serious issue and, you know, needs to be addressed if there's suspicion. And, you know, as far as just pulling this out of the air, if, like I'm saying, if people have noticed that their health has changed, they're tired, they're fatigued, they need to ask their healthcare professional, possibly they need a sleep study in order to go ahead and give them good data about this health issue. Okay? So I would say, yes, we need to have, you know, good information to help make good decisions. And, you know, some of the questions, if I can elaborate, you know, do you have sleep apnea? Well, you know, there's several questionnaires. And number one, in questions that your doctor may or may not have in the office, do you snore loudly? Are you tired, fatigued, sleeping during daytime? Are you falling asleep while you're driving? Has anybody observed you stop breathing or choking while sleeping? Do you have untreated high blood pressure? All right, we talk about body mass index with his height to weight greater than 35 kilograms per meter. Are you older than 50 years old? Your neck size, especially a male. Is your shirt collar 16 inches or greater? Also, are you a male? Male have greater preponderance to sleep apnea. And, you know, it's a matter, and Geraldine, I'd be interested to hear, with your 30,000 implanted people, how many are women? Do you have that data?
I will pull it up for you and get right back to you.
Yeah. I just wonder, you know, as far as what I know from the literature in our research, that 30% of the diagnosed people are males, 15% are females. Also, blacks have a greater incidence to sleep apnea than do whites. Asians have a lesser frequency of sleep apnea as opposed to Caucasians. The other interesting factor, and Geraldine, you may know that also, the prevalence of sleep apnea is increasing. People are getting more obese, and then people are also getting more detected. So it's one of those situations that we need to be very aware of and indeed seek treatment if indeed you have the problem. And like I'm saying, surgery is not the first treatment out of the chute. Overall, it's more of, you know, is there a mouthpiece type system that could work? You know, is there this CPAP that I could maybe get and try it to see if it would help me breathing if I could tolerate it? And again, with those things being said, even weight loss, and you're still not doing well, then indeed you may become a surgical candidate and look for surgical therapy. But Geraldine, the same thing, you know, you need people that have failed before they're able to qualify for Inspire, correct?
Correct. Like we talked about before, there are so many different options for a patient. We really just want the patients to get treated. We need them to get diagnosed and treated in whatever way forms best for them. There's, like you said, there's CPAP, there's oral appliances, there's different surgical procedures, but whatever's going to be best for that patient, if they're treated, then they're not having health issues. They're not falling asleep while driving. They're able to work. We have a lot of patients who say, I just want to watch a baseball game and not fall asleep. Or I go on and go to my grandson's sporting event and not feel like I'm falling asleep. Things like that, we're trying to improve the patient's quality of life. And whatever method is best for you, that's what your healthcare provider will be able to tell you once you do seek help.
No, excellent. I think, you know, your company has the right philosophy, and indeed you've imparted that beautifully to my audience. And, you know, I thank you very much with regard to that. And, again, the same thing with our show. It's about information. Nobody is here touting surgery, surgery. We're saying, hey, let's be informed. Here are some facts. Here's something which is right on the edge of technology today, which seems to be working beautifully, and, again, will continue to improve. And so it is something. I think, Geraldine, we've made our audience more aware of this, you know, surgical treatment for obstructive sleep apnea. And, you know, we talked about, just summing this up, more for adults than children. And usually, let me say this, most children that have sleep apnea due to obstruction usually qualify to have their tonsils and adenoids out. In doing that, there seems to be most times resolution of sleep apnea symptoms and snoring. Mark, go ahead.
Well, we've got Donald from Oceanside, California, coming in basically saying, is there, you know, is this like an old age type of thing when you get the symptoms of sleep apnea? Do you hear this in kids 30 years old, or does this kind of resurface when you get up into your 40s, 50s, and 60s? Man, these questions, man, are
wow.
Unbelievable.
Well, again, very good question. As we age, the incidence of sleep apnea increases. So it is something, you know, that we see in an older population. Having said that, there still can be younger individuals. I think that Geraldine had mentioned about Down syndrome. You know, sometimes our Down's patients have floppy airways or very saggy tissue that they would qualify to go ahead and have Inspire being done. But it is something, as we see, you know, in the older population. We also see it with regard to males versus females. And that's, Geraldine, on your data, is that seem to be the trending? It's an older individual. It's a male versus a female. It's an Afro-American as opposed to a Caucasian. Do you have the demographics like that organized?
Yes. So based on the previous question that I was looking up the information for, we're about 70% male versus female. Average age is anywhere from about 35 to 65 that we see, based on that 30,000 population that we're currently working with.
All right. And, Geraldine, as far as parts of the country, where have these implants been done? Is there any particular region that your company has worked with patients, or is it nationwide?
Actually, it's available nationwide. So as I said before, if you go on the InspireSleep.com website, you can go under Find a Doctor. You can actually, it's as simple as putting in your zip code, and you can see every physician that is available for on the diagnostic side. So maybe you have not tried CPAP yet, and you need to see a sleep professional. You can click on that button, or if you've already been diagnosed with sleep apnea and you want to see an implanting physician, you can click on that button. But it's as simple as putting your zip code in, and you will see everybody that's available within a specific mile radius that you set.
Wow. I mean, that sounds like your company's done an awful lot of work to give people information and, you know, put it out there in a very accessible manner. And I love the fact that, and I wasn't aware of that, to be honest, Geraldine, that we're able to tap into that and talk to, you know, a patient that's had that procedure with very specific demographics for individual patients. That really is brilliant. Excellent. And, you know, as far as other data available, what other data is available in your database for our patients?
When they log onto the website, they can go in and they can view what the process is. It will actually walk you through start to finish the entire screening and implantation process, as well as long-term follow-up. It'll walk you through the cost and eligibility. So it gives you a checklist to see if you're eligible, and the cost information as far as the reimbursement goes. There is a frequently asked questions area on the website, and then there's also a free event site. So similar to this, we do many community health talks across the country, both remotely as well as in-person events that you can click and see if there's one near you. And then lastly, there's a Do I Qualify? So you click on that, you take a simple quiz, and then it will walk you through the next steps if you qualify, And if you don't qualify for Inspire, that's not saying you don't need to be treated. That's just saying Inspire may not be the right thing for you, but you can still use our database to find a physician near you that will help you get your sleep apnea treated.
Wonderful. And, you know, I mean, as far as a tremendous amount of research has been going on over the last several years, and, you know, you have doctors basically that will specialize in sleep because of the volume of people that do need treated. And, Geraldine, you have me in your website, don't you?
Yes, we do.
You do. All right. Because I do get calls about Inspire, so I thank you very, very much for that. And, Mark, what do you have to finish up here?
Vince from Marlboro, Mass. Says, is sleep apnea, is this a specialist you have to see, or can you discuss this with your doctor? Because I know things are specialized today with a lot of things in the medical business. Another great question.
Great question. Let me take part of it, and also Geraldine. You know, with regard to, I think, you know, there's always step one, step two, step three. I think the first step, of course, is to see your healthcare provider, your family doctor, to start with. And then a certain diagnostic testing, you know, needs to be looked at. And, you know, if indeed the testing is positive for sleep apnea and obstruction, then indeed, you know, if you have an otolaryngologist, if you have a sleep surgeon in your community, that may be the next level of referral. And Geraldine has, like I'm saying, I really haven't been through their website, but indeed, Geraldine, does that make sense to follow your website like that?
Correct. I would go on the website, if that was the information that I had, I would go on the website under Find a Doctor, and then you're going to select on the left-hand side, have not been diagnosed with sleep apnea. And when you click on that, like I said, you're going to put your zip code in, and you're going to be able to see every sleep professional in the area that diagnoses sleep apnea that we work with currently. So I would go on there. I'd find a sleep professional and get an appointment with them. They're going to be able to assess you as a patient to what your needs are, what your actual diagnosis is, and how that can be treated. And they'll give you different options. There's not one size fits all in sleep apnea, so that's why there's so many different buckets that you can, you know, decide what's best for you.
Excellent. And, you know, just maybe summarizing here a little bit with regard to, you know, well, what are the other possibilities? And, you know, indeed, this Inspire device is a very specific disease for or treatment for a very specific symptom disease. And, you know, we have other procedures. You know, if it is a nasal problem, you know, a nasal surgical problem, if it's something with the palate, the tonsils, again, if there's something in the airway that's of an issue, those things can be treated as well. And indeed, you know, your sleep professional will help determine that. But there, you know, one size does not fit all here, that it's a matter of what's my diagnosis? You know, what is my problem? That's where you need help to start with. Once the diagnosis is made, then you look at treatment options. And I think you go from there step by step, but indeed get the help of qualified professionals that will help improve your health. Do you agree with that, Geraldine?
Yes, I do.
Well, thank you. And, Mark, what else do you have?
Steve from Corvallis, Oregon, basically chiming in on this conversation, more or less says, you know, you brought up earlier about could it be a tone with people that are overweight that breathe heavy at night? He's 185 pounds. He said sometimes they'll snore, but would that be considered sleep apnea, you know, sometimes?
Well, again, now, you know, we're getting very minimal information, and we sure as heck don't want to give him bad data so that, you know, overall, I'm not sure how tall he is. You know, we don't know what his BMI is. We don't know if he has other comorbidities. We don't know his age. We don't know if he's a smoker. You know, we don't know if he has an alcoholic history. There is a lot going on, but the best way to do it is indeed seek a professional that can help guide you through that so he's not guessing. And maybe it is a weight issue. Maybe he needs to stop smoking. So indeed, let's go ahead and get good information, and let's have Steve see maybe a healthcare professional in his area. Mark, that's the best I probably could do on that one.
Yeah, and basically, Mary Ann, the regular from Philadelphia, I do a show which says, hi, guys, another great show.
Thank you, Mary Ann. And Mary Ann is on your Thursday night show?
Yes, unbelievable. She's great. And so it's getting around. This show is so unbelievable, and I'm blessed to produce it each and every week.
Well, thank you very much for that, Mark. And I'd like to thank the listening audience. Mark, do you have another question or two to finish up for today?
Dan coming in, and he is coming in from Woonsocket, Rhode Island, says, guys, great show. I look forward to this. And, man, oh, man, without, you know, a lot of health insurance, it sure gives me the insight to know that I can, you know, kind of do my research and listen to your show to help myself out. That's
a
good thing these days.
Yeah, Mark, and, you know, when we started the show, I mean, it was a matter to give our listeners health information. If they didn't have insurance or had high deductibles, at least they had a place that maybe they could call in and get a little bit of information or start the process to improve their health care. And that's what we've tried to do. And I think, Mark, we've been successful at doing that. The number of listeners increases, the number of questions increases, and again, our guests have been exceptional with regard to good information and giving us good data. So it's been a real pleasure. Geraldine, I want to thank you very, very much for today and all the excellent information. And Mark, you want to go ahead and start to wrap it up?
Yeah, as we wrap this thing up, let everybody know, Geraldine, how can people get a hold of you?
Sure. If they're interested in learning more about Inspire Therapy, your first thing would be to go to the website, www.inspiresleep.com. If you want to speak with somebody or you want to speak with me, just go into the chat room and type in your information, and we will get back to you. We have 24/7 answering. If you need specific information for physicians in your area, everything should be located on the website along with phone numbers specific that you can call in and get immediate assistance.
Beautiful.
And as I give it over to you, Doc, I know next week you're bringing another great guest, and if anybody's in that Pittsburgh area and they want to stop by, how would they and how can you be reached, my good friend?
Well, GJRMD, 308@outlook.com, and people are using it. And indeed, we are accepting new patients as always. But again, we have a lot of callers nationally, so there have to be good healthcare professionals in your area. Mark, next week we're having Dr. Eugene Myers on, and we're going to talk about training doctors, training residents, training surgeons. What's the philosophy? What are they teaching these days in residency to have doctors take care of patients today in this world? So that's kind of the topic for next week. Should be a very interesting show. As today was very interesting, I think our listeners received an awful lot of good information and a place to go to help talk about sleep apnea and sleep disorders.
No questions, and I know Marilyn Morales is down on your calendar too, the RN nurse who worked with 9/11 and stuff like that. So each and every week with the Geraldines coming through, the Myers coming through, and now the Morales is, I mean, it's just amazing what this show has become.
Yes. We've been very fortunate that we've had excellent guests and they've given us excellent information. And it makes it a pleasure. And again, the viewing audience, I indeed hope, is appreciating, of course, what we're doing. So, Mark, thank you very, very much. And we'll go ahead and close it up.
Yep. Yes. For Geraldine White in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, along with Dr. Greg Roscoe out there, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying, you know, catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms you subscribe to podcasts powered now by Mancini Media. We'll talk to you next week at this same time. Let everybody know and your friends across the airwaves. Have a great weekend, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you very much.